It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Listen up, people. We've got one last chance to double your impact when you donate during this May fundraiser. It's Match Monday, and the Investors Challenge Fund is matching donations today only up to $25,000. We need to put every single dollar of these funds to use for our newsroom in the months ahead so we can keep you and people across this country informed. Please give right now and generously at marketplace.org/donate. And thanks. On the program today, what the what with this economy? Also, egg yolks. Seriously. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, everybody, the 22nd of September. Good as always to have you along. Big week. We had the Fed, and I mean, we had the Fed. I think that's enough. Gina Smilek's at the New York Times. Sadiq Reddy is at Politico. We are going to talk things over. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
So, Gina, let me start with you. You noted in the newspaper of record the other day that Chair Powell, in his press conference on Wednesday after the interest rate announcement, used the word careful or carefully something like 19 times. What does careful or carefully look like over the next couple of meetings for the central bank?
Yeah, I think that that is a big open question, honestly. The Fed was clear that they might raise interest rates again this year, right?
Yep.
But they gave us very little detail on like what that would look like. Would that mean November or December? What standard would you have to meet in order to think you did in fact need to raise interest rates again? I mean, at some points in the press conference, he sounded pretty hesitant to raise rates again. It sounded more like, you know, they'd almost prefer not to, but they're prepared to if they feel like they need to. And obviously he emphasized, as they always do, that it's all going to depend on the data.
Right.
But I really think they shied away from giving any kind of guidance at all. So I think we are really looking at the next 2 months, like big old question marks. And then I think that sort of the future after that is even more of a question mark, because the Fed's been clear that it wants to keep rates high for a while. But like, what's a while? How long is that going to be? How high is high? You know, I think there are a lot of unresolved questions here. It's an uncertain moment.
I find that so interesting, Sudeep, because the Federal Reserve since like Bernanke-ish, right? Because Greenspan was famously opaque, but Bernanke and the rest of them started to firm things up. They have been really clear that they don't want to surprise anybody, that they always want the markets and consumers to know what they're going to do. And now, and I agree with Gina's analysis, they're basically going, yeah, we don't know.
They're saying we don't know, and they're using words like carefully, but they're also thinking words like humility. And I think Powell may have used the word humble here or there. And they're sitting back and watching nervously. Like, you know that they don't want to have to act again. They want things to calm down on their own. They know that there may still be long and variable lags, even if they don't know how long and how variable. They know all these things with policy, but they also recognize that, yes, gas prices can shoot up as they have been shooting up, and that can change the entire calculus. Yes, there could be some other shock, whether it comes from the United States House or something else that causes problems. And so they're just watching to see where does this world take us right now before they become the problem themselves.
So we'll get to the House in a minute, because that, you know, falls under a totally different line of questioning I have. But Gina, what do you imagine they would like to see over the next like 90 days?
I think that they would like to see more of what we have seen recently, which means that they would like to see continued slowdown in hiring, you know, maybe like a slightly higher unemployment rate, although I don't think that's something that they absolutely have to see as long as we're seeing slower hiring. And I think most importantly, a real slowdown in inflation, you know, something that shows that the recent slowdown is something that's sustainable. Those kind of nice, slow monthly prints that we've got in the last couple of months, that's a relatively high bar to cross. You know, if you talk to a lot of economists, there are some things that can make it difficult to keep that sort of pace of deceleration going. But I think that that's what they want. They want to believe that it's not a blip. They want to believe that we're really in a world where we're just kind of slowly but steadily getting back to 2% inflation.
So let me ask you, Gina, actually, as a woman who just wrote a book on the Fed and the history of the Fed, basically what you're saying is that the Fed needs to see more. And I wonder how that matches with what the Fed has historically said about things that make it make up its mind, if you will. Because now, right now, the Fed isn't making up its mind.
Yeah, you know, I think this moment fits really interestingly into sort of the Fed's whole transparency thing, right? Because they have moved a lot towards transparency in recent years. But I mean, what you see at moments like this, where they just don't know, is you can't be transparent about something you haven't decided, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that they're at a genuine moment of indecision. As a Fed reporter, I think you often have people say, like, what are they thinking? What's really in their minds right now? And I'm like, I think they're telling you exactly what they're thinking. I think they don't know. I think that there's a real, you know, towering uncertainty around the future. Is inflation really fading? Is the job market really slowing? Why are consumers still spending this much? You know, I think all of those questions, they're just hoping for some sort of resolution on them. And so I don't think they're like keeping their cards, you know, hidden or trying to be coy. I think that this is genuine. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's fair. So Sudeep, the Congress of the United States, specifically the House of Representatives, more specifically the Republican Party within the House, discuss.
Oh boy, this is a moment where you get to see everybody throw tantrums in public. This is democracy in action, I suppose. But it's also the fact that we don't have a parliamentary system where you change leaders every year or two. We've got this, so we deal with this. We're in this remarkable moment of watching the factions of a party fight with each other in the open. We remember seeing at the start of the year, the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, have to take 15 votes to get where he needs to get. He's got a week to figure out something. I would say if you borrow from the earlier conversation, he's got a narrow path to a soft landing here himself. He's got he's still got a possibility of pulling this out, but you know it's probably going to get ugly. You know it's probably going to have to require touching the stove or shaking the system in some way before people recognize that this is a dumb way to run a government and a dumb political move. But, you know, they sometimes need to go through that process.
Wow. I guess they and we need to go through it together. Gina, super quick on the way out here. The House is dancing around a government shutdown. There is the UAW strike. This is what Austin Goolsbee was telling me a week or two ago, 3 weeks ago, maybe. This is the bumpy part. These are the exogenous shocks that the Fed can't really count on figuring out what's going to happen.
Yeah, right. And they all seem like small shocks individually, but the problem is they're all happening at the same time. So, like, how do you prepare for a world where all this different stuff is sort of just getting tossed into the mix? Like, we've got this, like, crazy soup of all these various problems. And so I think that's the kind of reason that they're being so careful. This is exactly why they're keeping their options open.
Gina Smilek at The New York Times, Sudeep Reddy at Politico. Thanks, you two. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks, Kyle. You too.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Talk to you later. On Wall Street today, traders apparently decided to head into the weekend mostly unchanged. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. One imagines this next item is going to show up in the price of a Big Mac at some point. McDonald's told its franchisees today that if they want to open a new location, it is going to cost them. In an email seen by Marketplace, the company says it's going to charge a 5% royalty fee for some franchisees opening a new restaurant. That is up from 4%, which is where it's been for almost 30 years. We tell you all of this because the franchise model is a huge part of this economy. 790,000 some odd franchises accounting for millions of jobs. But as with so much else in this economy right now, that model is also adjusting to some strange economic headwinds. Marketplace's Matt Levin has it.
Greg Flynn and some business partners tried to start their own independent restaurant chain in the mid-90s. It was hard.
Landlords don't know you and don't want to lease to you. Vendors don't know you and are worried about selling to you. Employees don't know you and are worried about working for you. And then ultimately, customers don't know you and you have to convince them to come try you.
The franchise model promises to fix all that. Franchisees pay an established brand like Taco Bell a recurring fee, let corporate take care of the marketing, and then they can focus on operations. Flynn is now what's known in the franchise world as a mumbo, a multi-franchise owner. He has Taco Bell's, Arby's, Applebee's, and Pizza Hut's. He says with inflation, franchise models have offered another big advantage, leverage to keep input prices down.
Think how much cheese it uses for Taco Bell and for Pizza Hut. They can drive and do drive, you know, volume discount.
While fast food remains the prototypical franchise business, Matt Haller with the International Franchise Association says the model is pretty interwoven in your post-pandemic personal economy.
Marriott hotels, Great Clips salons, Anytime Fitness, the Goddard School, UPS store.
But over the past year, franchise enthusiasm has been draped in a familiar economic wet blanket, the Fed.
If you're going into a franchise business with, you know, real estate included, and you need to borrow money, you know, it's more expensive to borrow money, probably more than double the cost today than it was, you know, even a year or so ago.
Also more expensive, labor. Some parent companies are trying to help with recruiting and retention, but many prefer to keep employee issues at arm's length out of fear of triggering more regulation. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
So what time are you sitting down for dinner these days? I ask because yesterday, restaurateur Danny Meyer, the guy behind Shake Shack and a bunch of restaurants in New York City, tweeted an observation. When did a 6 o'clock dinner reservation, he said, become the new 8? Now, New York City has always been a late night scene, but it turns out people are eating earlier everywhere. Yelp says in 2023, the number of diners making reservations in the 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. window is double what it was in the before times. About 10% more reservations are made between 4 and 6 p.m. and 10% fewer between 6 p.m. and midnight. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab looks at what's bringing all those diners in so much earlier.
The dining room gets louder a bit earlier these days at Jeffrey Banks Italian and barbecue restaurants in New York and D.C.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are a zoo for happy hour. Extremely busy, 4 to 6. And we slow down like around 9:30, which is not normal in the restaurant world. Usually you're a little busy, get one more turn.
Bank is CEO of A La Carte Restaurant Group. He says in New York, a lot of theaters have changed start times from 8 to 7 p.m., and in D.C., a lot of government employees are working from home.
I do think you see a cultural shift, and I think that started with the pandemic. People are just trying to enjoy themselves and think differently.
And they're enjoying themselves more often. Sales at restaurants and bars surged this summer with pent-up demand for travel and activities. There are lifestyle reasons behind the shift, too. Helen Veit, a food historian at Michigan State, says people have become more health conscious over the past few years. Studies show eating dinner earlier is better for you and their sleep.
I can imagine people wanting just to get to bed early.
Earlier dinner, earlier bedtime. And that brings me to something a little personal. At our morning meeting, I told everyone I love this trend. I love eating early and being home in my PJs by 9 o'clock. And someone... it was Guy. Asked, how old are you? Here's Veit again.
Early bird specials or senior dining, or we see it as childish to eat early. I think some of those stigmas have gone away.
What does all this mean for restaurants Seth Gerber, who co-owns Mita, a restaurant group in Boston, is happy to welcome the early birds. He says it's especially helpful for his staff.
A lot of them are reliant on public transportation. They're coming from different areas of the city. They're able to wrap up their nights and make it home at a more reasonable hour.
More reasonable hours for everyone. Sounds good and not at all lame to me. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Coming up, over easy, medium, scrambled.
Really gently cooked, soft yolked eggs.
How do you take them? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials down 106 today, 0.3%, closed at 33,963. The NASDAQ descended 12 points, just shy of a 0.1%, 13,211. The S&P 500 subtracted 9 points, almost a 0.25% there, 43,020. Ouch. For the week, the Dow slid 1.9%. The NASDAQ gave up 0.3%. The S&P 500 dropped 2.9%. Matt Levin was telling us about changes in the world of franchising, so let's look at some of the biggest franchisers, shall we? Toolmaker Snap-on at an almost 0.3%. Planet Fitness shed nearly 1%. McDonald's picked up almost 0.4%. Today, shares in Ford Motor at an almost 1.9% today after the news that the United Auto Workers said it made progress in negotiating a new contract with ticker symbol F. Not true for GM and Stellantis. General Motors down about 0.4%. Stellantis gained 0.2% today. Bond prices went up. The yield on the 10-year T-note thus fell 4.43%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
Listen up, people. We've got one last chance to double your impact when you donate during this May fundraiser. It's Match Monday, and the Investors Challenge Fund is matching donations today only up to $25,000. We need to put every single dollar of these funds to use for our newsroom in the months ahead so we can keep you and people across this country informed. Please give right now and generously at marketplace.org/donate. And thanks.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Cause and effect was on display in the American housing market this week. The housing starts number the Census Bureau gave us the other day. It was pretty much what you'd expect in our higher interest rate environment. Housing projects that started being built, the absolute number of them, was down 11% July to August. That same report, though, also had in it the number of housing projects that were completed. And the trend there goes the other way, especially for buildings with five or more units in them. Those were up 46% month to month, 32% year on year. As Marketplace's Henry Epp reports, all those new apartments might help keep rent inflation under control, but they're only going to do so much to fix this country's housing shortage.
Every time Eric Farrell has built a new apartment building in Burlington, Vermont over the last few years, the units have been snapped up fast.
We post a unit for rent and it's gone within sometimes same day, certainly within a few days.
Demand has pushed Farrell and other developers to build more rental complexes, but they take years to complete, says Caitlin Shagrew-Walter, vice president of research at the National Multifamily Housing Council. And there was that big public health issue that threw everything off a few years back.
Some of these completions are surely things that were delayed during the pandemic.
All this new supply is bringing down the cost of housing in some places, says Lisa Sturdivant, chief economist at Bright MLS.
We're seeing owners of apartment buildings giving concessions, a couple months free rent, free parking.
So that's great, but demand isn't going away, in part because of what's going on in the home ownership market, says Danushka Nanakara with the National Association of Home Builders.
We have a large cohort of millennials that are in what we would traditionally say a peak home buying years, but we don't have enough housing inventory for them.
Couple that with high mortgage rates, and a lot of millennials are stuck in rentals, driving up demand. And while lots more apartments are opening now, that trend might not last. Caitlin Shagrew-Walter at the National Multifamily Housing Council says the number of apartment projects getting started is way down.
We're looking at a very complicated financing situation right now with interest rates where they are.
That's true for Eric Farrell in Vermont. Right now, his company is building a complex he expects to finish next summer. After that, he hopes to build another one, but when is anyone's guess.
Can we start it next summer when we're done the current building, or are we going to have to, you know, sit tight for a year or two? And it just depends on what goes on in the world.
Mostly, he says, the world of interest rates and construction costs. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
There was a time, late-ish 20th century, where an American dieter would opt for the egg white omelet. High protein, low fat, perfect. Sometime in the last 20 or so years, though, the egg yolk has come back into fashion, both as a virtuous source of fat and, as Marianne Bull put it in Eater magazine the other day, a sort of unlikely fetish object. The more orange the yolk, really orange, the better. The title of the piece is Orange is the New Yolk. Marianne, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Where did all of this come from? The whole perfect yolk, orange yolk thing? Come on.
Well, for me, they appeared in my kitchen and I became very grossed out and concerned and curious. My boyfriend about a year and a half ago brought a dozen Happy Egg Co. eggs home from the grocery store. And I had the strange experience of cooking one of those eggs and one egg from my CSA at the same time. And the CSA egg had a yolk with a nice, gentle yellow color. And the Happy Egg Company egg had this orange yolk that I can only describe as something that looked like medically dangerous. And I was just so curious as to kind of, you know, how we got to this place that people are paying for the simulacrum of what we think of now as very natural, very healthy foods. But at the end of the day, are sort of fake and can look a little terrifying when brought to the most dramatic extent.
So not to take all the joy out of this and you know, horn the marketplace angle into this story, but fundamentally, this is a marketing and branding story, yes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that the most interesting thing about this story is how this cycle of demand has been created, right? Because let's say in the aughts, you have two things happening, right? You have the locavore farm-to-table movement, mm-hmm. and also the Great Recession happens. So you have a number of people who have a growing interest in where their food is coming from and how it's produced, right? Mm-hmm. And you also have people who are interested in using cheaper products. And also around this time, we have the ramen boom, mm-hmm. particularly in New York and a lot of cities in the U.S. There are these very popular, very successful ramen restaurants that are opening up that are serving really gently cooked, soft-yolked eggs mm-hmm. on top of their noodles. So the egg is now appearing as a hen egg or a farm egg on fancy restaurant menus.
Aren't all eggs hen eggs?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, just checking. Sorry.
Yes, but that's how they're being marketed
right,
already, right?
Right.
So as our visual culture has become more and more intense, more people are posting photos on Instagram. And also since the pandemic, more people are interested in cooking at home. I think there's become this obsession with the orange yolk as the signifier of luxury and almost purity, really.
Right. The Instagramization of food is not to be underestimated here. But let me ask you this. Do you know off the top of your head how much your boyfriend paid for those Happy Egg Co. eggs?
I would guess it would be between $8 and $10.
Oh, man. That's a lot of money for a dozen eggs. I don't know. Was it a dozen? That's a lot of money for eggs.
It was a dozen. Yeah.
So what do we do with this? Because, you know, there are people who are going to be listening to this saying, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And there are going to be people who are listening to this saying, yes, no, absolutely. We want these animals to be well treated. We want, and if we can afford it, it's worth it to have this food. Where do we come down? I mean, you're the expert.
Well, I think it depends on what you're looking for. I mean, there are all of these different ways that these larger corporations are creating an orange egg. Most of it is through feeding the hens things like marigolds and turmeric and red peppers, which is like not bad, right? There's nothing unsafe about that. But
no,
I think...
No, but... Come on, really? Right?
Well, I just mean, I think it's fine for people to want an orange yolk. It's nice to have food that looks good, right? That makes us think that it's more delicious and it makes us get excited about cooking, which I think is wonderful.
Yes.
But I think it's important for people to know what they're getting.
I don't think that I've asked you yet how these eggs taste. Do they taste better?
I don't think that there is a huge difference between the orange yolked eggs you're getting at the store and the not orange yolked eggs you're getting at the store.
Right.
Now, you have to understand that, you know, one of the biggest factors that affects egg flavor is how long it's been stored and refrigerated for. So a fresher egg is going to be theoretically a more delicious egg. But I think that the Happy Egg Co. eggs taste like a nice egg. I think most people at the end of the day are not going to taste a significant difference between that and a cage-free, free-range, right, certified humane egg that they pay a dollar less for that has a yellow yolk in it.
Marion Bull, she's a food writer in Brooklyn. Marion, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me. This was fun.
I mean, I should go out and find some of these eggs and try them, right? That's what I had to do.
Yes. Try them and let me know what you think.
All right. I will. I will report back. This final note on the way out today, about which people will have thoughts, probably like orange yolks too. Amazon said today that it's going to start running ads on Prime Video. Prime Video, of course, is available for free, that's in air quotes, for Amazon Prime subscribers, along with their $14.99 month fee. Yes, you get free shipping with that, again, air quotes. Video can be had a la carte for $8.99 a month, but either way, now with ads. The company says it will run, and this is a quote, meaningfully fewer ads than linear TV and other streaming TV providers, end of quote. I am just going to say here, meaningfully fewer? Sure. All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context. I saw this on Reuters. Job cuts have come to the Federal Reserve. 300 cuts through the end of the year. In all, the Federal Reserve system as a whole employs about 21,000 people across its 12 districts and the Board of Governors in Washington. First cuts at the Fed, by the way, since 2010. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Donna Tam is the executive editor. Neil Scarborough is vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you on Monday. Everybody, have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.